we see this over and over again where the Jews
have
no problem.
You're talking about America, but they were immigrants from Spain.
That's right.
The Maranos, yes, they were put to Jews. And there's
now,
a whole literary genre in Spanish literature called the picaresque. And that genre was exclusively written by crypto-Jews. And in fact, through it, they employ a coded language with which they communicated with each other. For instance, los cansados in Spanish means the tired. Now, this is a euphemism for the Jews. It means those who are weary, waiting for the advent of the Messiah.
But see, now, here's the interesting thing, though. The Jews have never had any problem with making believe they are another religion and actually using their status as the host religion, if you will, whether it be Christianity or even Hinduism or doesn't matter what they change into, but they use the position as a way of gaining confidence in the country they live in, and in fact the whole time are undermining the population where they live. Such as Sarkozy is doing, such as Sabbatai Z and his followers did. And is it not true that this is as much a part of the conspiracy as any other?
Well, Sarkozy, you know, goes to church. I didn't know this until I attended Professor Forreston's trial in Paris. And there I had lunch with a friend of his in the interval between the trial in the morning and the trial in the afternoon. And I said to him, because the elections were just due to take place, and I said to him, French electors now have the choice between the mistress of a Jew, say Madame Royale, or the a Hungarian Jew, namely Sarkozy. Oh, he said, didn't you know Sarkozy goes to church? So there you see, this crypto business, it's got its roots, as you said, in the movement of Sabbatai Levi and the crypto Muslims, and in Spain with the Maranos and the crypto Catholics. I mean, the crypto Jews there.
Now, but we also have to take a look at this really sick level that Sabbatai C was willing to go to. I mean, he was a wife swapping problem. I mean, this guy was mentally ill. I mean, He did some terrible, bizarre stuff. He had no morals, this guy. And in fact, he set the stage for, again, the new bohemian movement, which also is libertine and wife swapping and all this other sick stuff. And in fact, he set the stage for the sickness that's spreading around the world today.
Well, that sickness has many roots. One of it is the Bloomsbury Group here in England, you know, and only a mile from where I'm speaking to you. They, I think, were the first in the 20th century to set low standards of sexual behavior, aiming ultimately at the dissolution of the family. Sabbatai Zvi was an opportunist. When, I think in 1684, the Sultan summoned him into his presence in Edirne and said, "Now, you're causing a lot of trouble amongst the Jews in my subjects. So now you're going to have to make a hard choice. Either you become a Muslim and drop all this this Messiah nonsense, or you lose your head." So he said, "You've half an hour to think about it. You just go into that room over there and give it a good think." So half an hour later, he re-emerged and said, "I've decided to become a Muslim." But, I mean, when we refer to Jesus as the Messiah, we forget that Jesus never had more than 12 people who believed in him. 13 if you include Mary Magdalene, 14 if you include Judas who betrayed him. But at one time, one-third of all the Jews in the world believed that Sabbatai Levi was the Messiah. So a considerable number of them followed him into Islam. And these are the people who control the press today in Turkey, the crypto Jews, all the secular and Republican newspapers like Cumhuriyet, entirely in their hands.
Well, so now we go back. Let's go back to the Freemason movement here in the modern period. You know, Freemasonry is just a front. Now there are many fronts these people have set up. They've set up think tanks, they've set up institutes, they've set up trusts, the Ford Foundation, the Carnegie Mellon Foundation, the you know, the round table is its own foundation. They've set
Moral
up Rand
Corporation, all of it, yes.
The Rand, mm-hmm. Yes, the Rand Corporation.
They're more powerful than universities. Because the universities have to do teaching, whereas these people have all their time to devote to research.
Well, what they've done is essentially, Jacob, is they've used their success across the world to propagate their ideas into the mainstream and got people who are not Jewish to do their bidding for them. Am I correct?
Well, listen to this. Several of the ulama have been, and this is again reverting to 1910, have been induced to become Masons, and their example is being used to overcome the scruples and prejudices of the people. A Turk described it as a process of drugging the people with Jewish hashish. That is to say, Freemasonry is Jewish hashish.
Ah. You see, because they promise you worldly possessions and great successes and monetary gain and great contacts with people around you, if you're in business or you're in medicine or if you want a great career. So what they do is they promise
you the
world.
They don't just promise, they deliver. Otherwise, nobody would continue to belong to the lodge. I mean, most people are in it for lucrative motives, for promotion in their job, for immunity from prosecution if they're businessmen. Because it's estimated that 46% of the judges here in Britain are Masons. Now, I mean, how can you have justice when these people, half the judiciary is Masonic?
But see, people don't make the connection that it's all at the very top. It roots back to Zionism and Judaism. And we need to make that link solid here, because people are in the alternative press, or people who are doing research parallel to mine, are trying to convince people that it ends at the Illuminati or it ends at the Masons. And I keep telling them, wait a minute here, all of the evidence I've discovered says that that's where it begins. Once you get to the end of the Masons, you get to the beginning of the real criminals.
Yes. Yeah.
Well,
what about all the American presidents? Beginning, I mean, I think there were how many? Only four of them who have not been Masons, and most of them have been scoundrels. George Washington was a Mason, a member of the Masonic Lodge in Alexandria, which is now a suburb of Washington, D.C. But I'd rather come down to the 20th century. I mean, what about President Wilson, the founder of the League of Nations, which was the first attempt at global control? He was a Mason. Now, the Jews, he was not only a Mason, he was the son of a Presbyterian minister. Now, you know, with any kind of puritanical religion, and this goes for my religion as well, the invariable accompaniment of Puritanism is hypocrisy. Puritanism breeds hypocrisy. Now, here's a man who read the Bible every morning, but at the same time, he was an adulterer. The Jews found out about it. They knew the name of his mistress, who she was, all about them, and they threatened to expose him if he didn't do their bidding. And the same goes for Roosevelt, because Roosevelt also had a mistress. In fact, he died in the arms of the mistress, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, I saw pictures of him.
I mean, you're an American. I don't need to tell you that. You know your own history.
Yeah, but you know,
better than I do.
I've seen pictures of Eleanor Roosevelt, my friend.
Oh, well, then I sympathize with him, too. I'd sooner perish in the arms of the mistress than lie in the arms of Eleanor Roosevelt. I mean, the most hideous woman I have never seen. It was a political marriage. These are political marriages. Look, I mean, I've been to Hyde Park. I've seen the rose bed where Roosevelt is buried. More interesting than that, I was in their bedroom. And do you know, there is a communicating door with his mother's room so that she could keep an eye on them. Now, these were all political unions.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now we take a look at the modern world. We're coming to an end of an era, it seems to me. I have done my present research and concentrated on my speciality, which is finance. And I've seen the end run here on this money system. We are coming to the end of the greediest period in human history. Why? Because the greed just didn't wasn't concentrated in a single country or a single region or a single block of alliances, but global. And the fact of the matter is that we are now victims of a fiat world. We have an entirely fiat currencied world.
Every country has been conquered by the money power. Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Including the Muslim countries.
That's yes. right. That's mm-hmm. right. Now, I'm looking at an implosion here coming imminently as a result of these crimes that have been committed over the last generations. And I'm wondering it seems to me that the people in charge of this are going to let the people who help them get up to the top. They're not going to back them in the end. In other words, if you've been helping the criminals through the masonry and all that, and you're not from this Jewish Zionist group, you're not going to be saved by them. In other words, once they've used you up, they cast you to the dogs, don't they?
Well, they discard you, certainly, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Just look at the CIA operators in Asia. For instance, this one who's just been sacked in Pakistan. His usefulness is all used up, so the Pakistanis are allowed to get rid of him.
Yeah. Same thing with Noriega.
I'm glad you raised the question of finance, because I too am convinced that we confront another 1929. This is an action repeat of the Wall Street crash, which had global repercussions. But that crash was no accident. So, Darryl, do you think this one can be an accident either? I mean, look, that crash was engineered by the bankers of Wall Street in order to bring Roosevelt to power, because he was their man. Behind the present crisis.
Yeah, but you know, it also made people's businesses fail and left them open to be taken over for pennies on the dollar. I mean, a lot of great businesses that had been built up before the 1929 crash fell into problems with money, and of course, along came the big criminals later on and scooped up all their ideas, all of their good business assets. And marshaled on with higher than bigger wealth than ever.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, yes, it is happening again. And I wonder what it is that I could share with the people listening to help them get through what I know is coming. Not what I suspect is coming, but what I know is coming. Because, you know, this program, a lot of people don't know this. I've been doing this, James, Yaakov, for free. For now, going on 5 years straight, never taken a paycheck for it, spent my own money on it. But I know right now we're coming to the point where money is not going to be important. What's going to be important is the things you have around you, and that includes family, that includes a good garden, that includes healthy bodies and healthy outlooks, and it might even include arming yourselves if necessary. But the fact of the matter is, it's going to come down to having the right things in your possession in order to survive what's coming, because
yes.
money is not going to have the value.
No. As a historian of Muslim Spain, I am often asked, how was it that the Muslims were able to hold out in the peninsula for 800 years, particularly the last 200 or 300 years, when they were surrounded by militant Christian kingdoms on all sides? And I give them the answer. I said, it's the opposite of what is happening today in the Arab world, because what is happening today in the Arab world is that a culture of dependence has been inculcated, whereas in those days it was a culture of independence. The Muslims in Spain, they survived because they knew how to live within their own resources, and that's the sole formula for survival.
Yes, yes. So what we do is we have to make an honest assessment of how and what it is we need to make the survival choices, and start exercising them immediately, whether that is, if you have land, whether that is to dig a garden, whether that is to make sure you have a water supply, whether it is paying off debts so you're not subject to confiscations, there's a lot of choices that people have to, decisions they have to make, but I'm urging them to make these decisions imminently, because we don't have a lot of time, in my view.
Well, just yesterday, the third biggest tour operator in Britain crashed, leaving thousands of holidaymakers stranded. Now, the question everybody is asking, who's going to be next?
Well, we're talking about Lehman Brothers going down the tubes right now, one of the largest investment houses in the world. We're talking about American International Group, AIG. going bankrupt. This is a $34 billion business bankrupt. We're talking
yes.
about Washington Mutual Bank, the fourth largest bank in the United States, bankrupt. We're talking about Abbey National on the verge of bankruptcy, Barclays International on the verge of bankruptcy. We're talking about banks across the world on the verge, if not already in bankruptcy, and they just haven't declared it yet. And so we have the next 3 months of our lives is going to be some of the most outrageous moments in modern history, if not of all history. And I'm just sitting here watching it unfold, and I'm saying to myself, holy moly, we got to get some work done here.
But, no, I don't know about you, but personally, I welcome the collapse of capitalism. And the last time it almost collapsed, in 1929, it had two most important effects. One was that when the ripples of the Wall Street crash reached Europe, and in Germany there were 7 to 8 million people unemployed and starving, and German mothers were killing their children because their breasts would not lactate to feed them, they turned toward the only man who had the solution, namely Adolf Hitler. And that brought Hitler to power in Germany. At the same time, Britain passed, devised the system of the Imperial Preferences Agreement, signed at Ottawa, the purpose of which was to isolate Britain, not just Britain, but her empire, from the fluctuations of international loan capital. Now, one of America's conditions for entering the Second World War on the British side was that the imperial preferences system be abolished. And do you know, our Labour government put in office in 1945, its first act was to abolish the imperial preferences system. And that way, we fell under the control of the Jewish bankers of New York.
Mm. Well, you've got your own Jewish banker sitting right in the square mile, don't you?
Oh, yes. And Margaret Thatcher created in Canary Wharf a second Manhattan. I mean, we've got our own Wall Street right on our doorstep. And said, right, there's said to be more financial expertise in the square mile, the square mile is another term for the City of London, than anywhere else in the world. And it's through this that Britain exerts her influence worldwide.
Well, you know, what I'm saying right now,
it's not through an empire, because the empire no longer exists. It's through the adjoint manipulation of capital, which controls all the Arab countries. I mean, what about all the Gulf countries? What about Saudi Arabia? All of them are controlled by a usurocracy.
That's right. But what role is gold and silver going to play in this upcoming mess, in your view? Actual physical gold and silver. I'm not talking about the exchange.
Well, I wish I hadn't parted my family's gold. I mean, they, like many old Scottish families, they were hoarders. So when my mother died in 1968, I inherited the family fortune such as it was. The money was in two building societies. But more important than that, there was a cash box containing about 500 half sovereigns, and strangely enough, only 8 sovereigns. And I parted with it all for a song and refurnished the house. Now I'm wishing I'd held on to it, because I'd be one of the few people to survive the coming crisis.
Yeah. I think it's important that
gold will retain its value. I mean, look, a friend of mine, Professor Sebrikov, a Russian exile, a Tsarist exile, living in Berlin during the Second World War, he told me that by the end of the war, people believed wherever else in the world there was Jews, at least there was none left in Germany. He said to me, the day that Germany surrendered, they'd come up. He said, out of the cracks between the paving stones, out of the drains and the undergrounds, they appeared. And in every corner, there was a stall set up and reading, gold bought and sold, because the only thing that retained its value was gold. You've seen those that footage, haven't you, of the German Reichsmarks being destroyed in cement mixers?
Yeah,
it was,
yes,
paper money was worthless. The only thing that had any value was gold.
Well, we're in one of those periods again, and you know, when I try to share this this almost awful, I mean, I don't enjoy any of this information being shared, although it's my responsibility as a righteous and caring human to share it as best I can with as many people as I can. I don't enjoy it, and I must say that the urgency that I try to impart when I make these broadcasts, maybe I'm not doing enough work here, because I don't see I don't see people running around telling everyone, because this is not something that we're going to avoid. Everyone
well,
needs
I
to
see
know
Armageddon around the corner.
We got to tell everybody to get ready for this mess, Yaakov, mm-hmm. or we're going to or they're going to suffer. And suffering is, well, you know, suffering matures, but suffering can be avoided at some level. And the fact is if we hope to ever eject these people from our lives, we can't do it from weakness. We have to do it from strength. And the only strength that you can have is understanding what's coming and preparing for it.
And how does one do that? Because the enemy controls the media, they control the publishing industry, they control the networks, they control the television, they control the newspapers, they control the universities.
Yeah, but Yaakov, I'm being listened to in over 150 countries right now.
You mean 150 countries are listening to me talking to you?
That is right, my friend.
Well, it's very flattering, but at the same time, it's frightening. I mean, we're halfway through Ramadan, so if I collapse midway through this broadcast, you know that I've passed out from hunger, because breakfast is not till 7 o'clock. But if suddenly the wine goes silent, maybe I've been assassinated on account of the candor of my speech.
Well, I worry every day about having my door kicked in down here, but, you know, somebody's got to take the risks. If I don't do it, who's going to?
Hmm?
I mean, we're doing this. I'm not doing this because it's fun again. This is not entertainment radio, and this is one of the things that I've tried to explain to the management of the radio station that I'm broadcasting from, that this is something that needs everyone's urgent attention, and we need to make this a priority in everyone's lives, because these kinds of facts need to be shared far and wide. I mean, we're getting traction in Pakistan. We're getting traction in the South African Islamic community. But we need traction across the globe in every community. And I'm asking the Islamic community and the Muslims that are listening to this, as well as the Christians that are listening, to reach out to people around you, regardless of what religion you're from, and share these informations, because ultimately we have to work this plan of stopping these people together. We can't do this as Islam against the bad guys, or as Christians against the bad guys. It's got to be humanity against these criminals.
The Zionist era of global monopoly may be coming to the end. It's being destroyed by modern electronic communications. It's said that the cassette brought down the Shah. What will bring down all their placemen in countries like Saudi Arabia and Kuwait? It could be the internet. You see, at the time, there only are about five or six news agencies in the whole world, Associated Press, Reuters, and so on. So it was easy for the Zionists to control, to filter the information getting through to people, so long as they controlled those news agencies. And there were various levels of filtration. One was the news agencies, a second is the voluntary censorship which the newspapers impose on themselves, a third is government censorship. But that area of their domination of the media is coming to an end. It's been broken down by modern electronics.
Yes, but they also got designs on stopping the internet. Now, what happens if they just get rid of my website? I mean, I've got, you know, 20, 30,000 people visiting the site every day. But what happens if they take the site down? You know, are we prepared to soldier on without the French connection? I mean, mm-hmm. I'm looking at some people in the United States who supposedly tell the truth, and here they are telling everybody that the German death cult is behind all of these problems. And I said, you know, this guy has 100,000 people listening to him say this. And I'm saying to myself, why is it that the liars are getting much more airplay than the truth tellers? We have to fix that problem.
Yes.
Well, you know, it's a battle. It's a pitched battle, ladies and gentlemen, and you're part of it. You're part of it because you know the facts. Everybody listening to my voice and listening to Yaakov Zaki, James Dickey, speak right now, you're part of the battle because now you know the truth. Fact is, you can go and run away and make believe you didn't hear what you heard today or heard in my last broadcast, but you know something? It's not going to change the outcome unless you get active. And the fact is, we need all to be active. You know, this Ramadan period is supposed to be for celebration, but celebration is really not not as wonderful as it could be if we're facing these kind of issues. The fact is that families are being destroyed, Jakob. The families, family values, this prostitution and pornography and sickness around the world being propagated by these individuals that we face, these criminals we face.
I saw it in Iran under the Shah when pornography was being sold openly in kiosks on the main street. And I graduated from university in Spain. It was under Franco. Franco didn't die till 1975. But after that, the pornographers took over. And now Spain is riddled with pornography. The films that you see on television at 11 o'clock every night are just blatant pornography. It's much worse than anything you see on the sex channels in Britain.
That's right. It's unbelievable. I'm appalled and sickened by it. And we got this guy Ratzinger, this Zionist Pope, who's handing over the Christian community to the criminals. We've got people like Pat Robertson in America, this Zionist Protestant, who's handing over the Protestant Church to the criminals. We've got people like King Abdullah handing over his countrymen and others in Islam to this criminal gang. The fact is we've got turncoat criminals in each of one of our faiths that are turning over the freedom that we hope to have over to the crooks.
Well, here in Britain, we no longer enjoy these freedoms. In fact, I mean, the immunity from prosecution, the guaranteed under the which is that, I mean, the Magna Carta is the basis of English liberty from 1212, that you cannot be put in prison and held without charge. You have to be proved either innocent or guilty. All that is gone. It went even at the time of the Irish Troubles, the IRA. You had the detention camps, which were just concentration camps under another euphemistic form of nomenclature. You've got it now, with 42 days detention for Muslims. I know many Muslims, they're trying to terrorize and criminalize the Muslim community. They're arresting people whom I know personally, holding them in cells for 6 days, and then the seventh day you're taken into a different room altogether, a comfortable room, and they ask you to work for them. It happened to a friend of mine just a mile or two from here in Paddington Green police station. Another one faces a sentence of 7 years for sanction busting because he was exporting to Iraq. I mean, you know that children were dying in Iraq because of the sanctions imposed by the United Nations, which is of course controlled by the United States, and the United States is controlled by the Zionists.
That's right. These, you know, when we take a look at these facts, Jakob, what else can I do, in your view? I mean, since I have this soapbox, I have the largest soapbox that has been around since Father Coughlin in the United States in the 1930s. I am the largest teller of the truth in the whole world since this man. How can
I know
I make
that
this
the Vatican tried to shut Father Coughlin up?
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. And he refused.
Mm-hmm. He was a very brave man.
Well, the fact is, what can I do, in your view, to make this a better message, a bigger message, a larger and more important a message for people who are listening so that they will get off their backside and do something? I mean, we need action, see, because sitting at your computer and waiting for the next report or the next I Am the Witness website is not doing it. The action has to be with the listening. What is your recommendation to the listeners before we go here? We're at the end of our program.
Yeah, I wish you had asked me this on an earlier occasion, because I might have been able to devote some thought to it.
Well, I think, you know, we need to reach out to every human being of good moral character and righteous character, and even people who have questionable character but that can be saved, because we can bring the facts to people. We can show them what's happening to them in this life. Many people will ignore you, but many people will not. The fact is, some people will turn and say, I'm too busy, or I don't think so, or I think you're full of it, or I don't. But some people will say, really? Is that true? And you feed them the information, and you will have an ally. We need to go out and recruit people to the truth. And this is an action that the listener has to take, Yaakov.
Well, I mean, I have a friend, a novelist, Bill Hopkins, one of the angry young men, and he contends that history is itself a teleological force, because when the life force is threatened, life takes steps to protect itself. And he said suddenly the life force can take a sudden swing and reverse the direction of history.
Well, you know, there is in place right now.
It's just the instinct of self-preservation, Darrell, which is instinct in every human being, indeed in every animal, in every living creature. Because when life itself is threatened, life takes steps to protect itself.
But
and this is it. We face extinction. I mean, we face extinction at the hands of Bush and Co., don't we? And I'm not just talking about extinction at the hands of an atom bomb, but what he's doing to the world.
Well, you know, what I've been talking about here in people in past broadcasts is the fact that these people have a teleological suspension of ethical principles. And they have suspended their principles of fair play and honesty and kindness and morality. And what we've got instead is a Machiavellian world of criminality and usury and sickness. And instead, we have to reverse that. We have to start taking a look at our inner selves and say, where do we want to be in this fight? And I tell you where I want to be, ladies and gentlemen. I want to be on the side of good sharing people, caring people, family people, loving people. These are the kinds of people I want to surround myself with. But I also want courageous people willing to fight for what they know is true. And those are the kinds of people that are going to help us bring this to a victory. Now, victory is a goal here. And it is certainly not out of the reach of our lives, because, you know something, as long as there is breath in our bodies, there is hope. And I continue to have great hope that humanity is going to rise up against these criminals, Yaakov.
Well, I can only hope you're right. I can point to some of the defects in my own community, in the Muslim community. Look, I've been a Muslim now for over 50 years, and I've noticed certain things. I have noticed that these people who come here from the East, they put their sons and daughters, particularly their sons, into the top earning professions, into law, accountancy, medicine, dentistry, surgery above all, but not into the intellectual professions. So the enemy has won by default, Darrell, because we don't have Muslim broadcasters, Muslim philosophers, Muslim writers, Muslim novelists, Muslim thinkers, even Muslim journalists. So I think the lies within us. We have allowed these people to get off with it. They have succeeded by default.
Yaakov, we're at the end of our time here, and I do notice that it's over. We've run over a little bit. I'm going to have to call this a show. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you all for listening to this broadcast. It's been a very informative broadcast. I want to thank my guest, Yaakov Zaki, James Dickey, and I wish him all of you. I wish you well for your Ramadan, and I wish you all to take upon yourselves these truths that we've shared today, and share them and spread them as widely as you can. Until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, this is Darrell Bradford Smith telling each and every one of you, please be well. Bye bye now.